Okay, now it's my great pleasure to introduce Helen Rowell and Katrina Ellis from APRA. And what we've asked Helen and Katrina to focus on today is APRA's data analytics evolution from information to insights. It's a fascinating topic. I know we've all been involved in giving APRA lots and lots of data over the last few years. So what they're going to be talking about is increased volumes of data and computer power driving rapid advancements in the use, impact and flow of data across industries. Like all of us, APRA is also undergoing its own data transformation. So how is it transforming its use of data and analytics to shape the way it supervises? How will our use of data and analytics continue to evolve and shape the insights we as actuaries provide? So Helen and Katrina probably don't need much introduction, but I'll do a brief one. Helen, we know well as an ex-president of the Institute. She's been deputy chairman of APRA since 2015, and she's basically had a long and distinguished career at APRA over many years. Katrina Ellis is a senior financial regulator with APRA, experienced in regulatory frameworks for banking, super and insurance. She's a Fulbright scholar with a PhD in finance from Cornell University. Please welcome Helen and Katrina.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I think it's been a while since I've addressed an actuarial conference, so it's great to be back. And thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk today about a topic that's really high priority for APRA at the moment, and which we hope is also a very high priority for the industries that we regulate and for those who have key roles in the industries, such as the actuarial profession. APRA is undergoing a significant transformation in how we manage and use data. But our story is certainly not unique, and our goal today is really by sharing with you where we are heading in the view that that might provide you with some ideas to consider on your approaches to data analytics. Actuaries, of course, do have an important role to play here. You're a very data-driven profession, and so staying at the forefront and leading change to support financial services organisations getting the most value out of available data and information is key. So today we are really going to outline where we've come from, why we're looking to transform and what we're doing. We're going to give you some examples which might seem a bit mainstream, but they're really just a taste of where we've started, and we've included a lot more examples in the presentation handout that perhaps gives you a better sense of some of the more forward-looking analysis and approaches that we're doing. We didn't want to take the risk of trying to use too much technology up here and having the connections and things not work and disappointing or not being able to demonstrate stuff. And then I think the other point, and Katrina will particularly talk a little bit about this, is sort of what's next. So I think everyone kind of understands our role as a prudential regulator. It's set out in the APRA Act and the various legislation, and it's pretty well known and hopefully reasonably well understood. I think what is often less understood is the fact that we do have this secondary role, which is around financial sector data collection. We are an organisation that collects a lot of financial sector data, not just for APRA's own use, but for use across a number of different regulatory agencies and for a number of purposes. And we also share the data that we collect in a number of ways to a wide range of stakeholders, mostly by the publications that we release on a regular basis based on our sort of regular data collections. But we also provide a lot of information to other stakeholders for specific purposes like research requests, to support government policy making, to address inquiries from the government and other regulators, and also providing a lot to international bodies as well. So we have a long history and a legislated role in relation to data, but what we realised a couple of years ago was that we really needed to significantly transform and improve and evolve the way we do data analytics and leverage the data that we have. Data is valuable, as you would all know, and getting the most out of that for our own use, but more importantly, making it more widely available and more readily available to our external stakeholders was determined to be key. from our own perspective, I think we are very much aware that we are a small organisation with responsibility for regulatory oversight of a very large financial services sector with hundreds of entities and over $6 trillion of assets. And so we need to be better at leveraging data and drawing insights from the information that's available to us if we're going to be able to effectively deliver our mandate and appropriately deploy the scarce resources that we have available. So Katrina is going to talk now a little bit about the particular transformation journey that we're on, and then I'll come back and give some examples of how we're using data.
So while we've been looking internally at what we should be changing and really asking ourselves, as Helen said, how can we get more value and insights out of the data and analytics that we do, we also thought it was important to consider the context that we're in and the changing environment. So this slide shows a number of headlines from the last year or so that really emphasise how data is becoming more prominent and new technologies are enabling new approaches. The Australian government has recognised that how the government uses data and how it shares data between agencies and with the public needs to evolve. Big data is transforming many industries and companies, so how can it transform regulation? And the technological changes have enabled solutions that were not even thought of a few years ago. And on top of this, the government's looking to APRA with new responsibilities, one example being the Bank Executive Accountability Regime. So APRA's response to this has been to put a strategic focus on data and analytics. And data and analytics together are enablers for APRA, better data availability and analytics that create insights from data will fundamentally support APRA achieving its mission and delivering on its strategy. So what have we done as part of our strategic transformation? The first step was a restructure. And so we've created a new division, and this has brought together our risk specialists, our statistics team, and our industry analysis team to form a new division. And the purpose of this is to strengthen what we call the horizontal view. Our individual supervisors have a very deep, vertical, in-depth view about a single entity. But what about the horizontal view across risks and across the industries? And so that's the purpose, one of the purposes of forming this division, to strengthen that view across a risk, across an industry, and fundamentally get more value and insights from our data. The second arm of our strategic initiative is the transformation program to modernise our data and analytics capabilities. The purpose is to transform how we manage data and how we get value out of data and put data and insights in the hands of users to enable decisions. And the third aspect is really behavioural change on how we use data. We need to move from a siloed view on data to a more integrated view where data is viewed as a strategic enterprise asset. Fundamentally, sharing data and having a common understanding of risk across the organisation is important. If we're all looking at different metrics and different numbers, we can't effectively share a view on risk. So transforming our approach enables APRA to strengthen our core supervisory and policy functions, to sharpen our approach to risk-based supervision by supporting supervisors using their expert judgment, but armed with better data and analytics, and supporting our policy advisors to enable more evidence-based policy development, and also supporting APRA's ability to deliver more effective advice to government grounded in facts and insights. We've got smart and experienced people at APRA, and supervisory expert judgment is at the core of what we do. But we've got limited resources, and we've got more data and information that we can process than we can process as humans. And so technologies are now available that can support our people focus more on the core of their job. I want to give you a bit of a high-level picture of the program timeline to just give you a more sense of our data transformation. It is a multi-year and multi-stream program of work. It's ambitious and it's challenging. There are five key components. At the program level, the focus is on the organisational change. And then there are four projects underneath that: data collection solution, changing how we collect data; the enterprise data warehouse, changing how we store data; access to data, changing how we access and visualise data and make it available; and our innovation centre lab, which is changing how we're exploring and experimenting with data. The data collection solution project is the most external focused. We've had an extensive engagement over the last quarter, and that'll continue over the next couple of years. We're in the process of setting up industry reference groups that will meet regularly over that time to supplement other periodic stakeholder engagements we'll be having. And you can see with that, APRA has to do our own build of the new data collection solution, and then with all of the entities that report to us implementing change from late 2019 onwards. The other three projects are more internally focused, and these are really about us creating new capabilities in a project setting and then transitioning to BAU as we set up new ongoing teams. I just want to highlight with the lab environment, this is a completely different approach for APRA, and here we're experimenting with text analytics. We get a lot of documents as well as the numeric data that is provided to us at APRA, and so what can we do by mining those documents as data? How can we use new technologies and approaches there? But also experimenting more with models, with predictive models and forecasting. And you can see also with the lab, we have this building the internal analytics community. And so this is part of the organisational change as well. We actually want to build more of an analytic community within APRA and really celebrate our analytic insights and bring together analysts across the organisation who want to engage on how can we get more value out of analysis. So we're really on a journey of change. We want to deliver efficiencies, but importantly, behavioural change is a big component of it. And the transformation is about supporting all of our staff, and in particular frontline supervisors, to harness the value they get from the resources they have available and do their job better rather than spending time on processing data. You can see we want to move from passive consumption of data to more active exploration, less time looking for data, more time interpreting it. And the moving from siloed views with multiple standards for how we measure things to a single standard, and ultimately from looking backwards to looking forwards. And we expect that this resonates with many in the audience as you're also considering how your organisations can get more value out of data, resources, and in a more efficient way. But change can be difficult, and changing how people work and processes and tools they use to do their work requires sustained support, training and communication, so we're not underestimating the challenge of achieving this business transformation, but we believe the benefits make this imperative. So I'll now hand back to Helen to give some examples of how data and analytics are already shaping how we regulate.
Thanks, Katrina. So what we really wanted to do now was to highlight some examples of how we're using the data and what we call sort of data stories to show how data and analytics enables us to be more effective as a prudential regulator. These particular examples that I'll quickly run through now are from work that we've done over the last couple of years across different industries. And much of this is already in the public domain through various speeches and publications that we've given. They do give an indication of where we're heading, but as I said, this is really only the start, and we're exploring much more innovative analysis at the moment as well through the Innovation Lab in particular. I think from an APRA perspective, it's important that we look at data at a number of different levels, and that we do that in a consistent way, as Katrina was talking about. So we need to look at data at a system level, at an industry level, at an entity level. We need to do peer benchmarking within industries. We need to look at industry trends and developments and be forward-looking. have that system-wide view about how trends in different industries might impact the financial system more broadly, and also when we're looking at policy development, to use the data to enrich and provide some quantitative insights where we can, some evidence to support policy settings. So if I just take you through some examples of those different levels now. Some of you may have seen this work before. It's the work that we've done in the ADI space around mortgage lending standards. And this is about looking at entity-level information across an industry to support the achievement and delivery of supervisory outcomes. So when we were looking at the lending standards for residential mortgages in the ADI sector in 2015-16, we wanted to find a way to try and highlight where the weaknesses and issues in lending standards and practices were. So we undertook a hypothetical borrower exercise, which is about collecting data that was different to what we normally collected. And in essence, we went out to a group of ADIs and asked them to provide us with how they would assess borrowers with different attributes. How would they look at the income? How would they determine expenditure? And how much would they lend to these different borrowers? And this is just one chart from that analysis that shows how we use the data to provide insights and, in essence, determine where the outliers in the industry were. We repeated the exercise over 2 years so we could also see how lending practices had changed over that period. And what was really powerful in this exercise was that we could then use those sorts of charts in our conversations with individual ADIs to give them an anonymised peer comparison to show where they sat relative to their peers. It really focused the conversation, particularly with those entities that needed to change their own approaches to lending standards and practices. And so you can imagine, if you just look at this chart, there's one in the middle where the red dot is the 2015 number and the blue bar is the 2016 assessment, and to the right is less conservative borrowing, and to the left is more conservative borrowing or lending standards. And so clearly, you know, the ADI that significantly strengthened their approach to lending standards in the middle there, the conversation with them would have been very different to the one at the far right, who was at the less conservative end and remained at the less conservative end over those 2 year periods. So by giving this sort of evidence to our supervisors, it means that they can have more focused and stronger supervisory interactions. It isn't just a statement of us going out and saying we're concerned about your lending practices. We've got some evidence that demonstrates the outcomes of the processes that the ADIs themselves have in place, and show them what the outcomes from those their own processes are and where they sit and where we think there's room for change. This is a similar type of example in the superannuation space, looking at assessment of member outcomes. And it's, again, using visualisations of key metrics to enhance our risk assessment of where the issues are with particular entities within the industry, and make sure that we are focusing our attention on those entities where there look to be outlier outcomes. So it's looking at the whole industry, but honing in and helping supervisors make decisions about whether they need to worry about a particular issue with an entity or not. And so this is looking at relative expense levels for members under age 25 in a MySuper product, and it's showing by entity the proportion of members in that cohort and the relative expense level for the members in that cohort. And so it's an example of where you can see that those in the top right have both a relatively high proportion of members in the under 25 cohort, but are also looking relatively expensive compared to peers. And so it's about using that to have a conversation with the entities in that quadrant to try and understand what's driving that and whether there's a need for change and what the action is. It's an example of how we're actually drilling down much further into the data than we would have previously done, looking at different metrics broken down in different ways by different cohorts of members, whether it's age or account size or whatever, to try and draw conclusions and get a sense of how trustees are thinking about their membership and what they're providing to their membership.
So again, it's been a very powerful tool for supervisors to go out and have quite meaningful conversations with trustees about how they think about their best interest obligations and what they're delivering to members. So it's really been quite groundbreaking in some ways in changing the supervisory approach within APRA, and it's also been a significant driver and help in our approach to policy evidence as well, and has been has significantly informed our current member outcomes policy proposals. This is an industry level view, and it is trying to look at trends that might be impacting or shaping an industry, and it's taking available data to have a forward-looking view to highlight an industry trend. And in this particular case, it's the changing ownership in the life insurance industry. And making sure that we understand where that is now and where it might be heading and what the implications of it for us are. And so it's in this particular case, we've taken some projections from individual entities and consolidated those, factored in what we know about current and potential transactions and changes of ownership, to form a view about the industry and how it is moving from being significantly domestically owned to majority foreign owned, and in fact potentially almost fully foreign owned within the next 5 years or so. And you would all be well aware of some of the drivers for that. This chart is just part of the analysis that we've done in this space. The more important point is, once we understand what those trends are, what do they tell us about risks and issues? What do we need to understand about the implications of that change of ownership for the industry? There are positives and there are negatives. The benefits of strong foreign owners with deep sources of capital and long time horizons aligned to the insurance cycle, the enhanced product innovation and change that might bring and the competition that it might bring is a positive, but it also presents challenges in terms of our supervision, our need to engage with and understand parent companies that are operating in different regulatory regimes and the like. So it's been a useful exercise for us to take this forward-looking view of an industry and understand what it might mean for us, as well as for the industries that entities that we regulate. The final example that I want to talk about today is looking at information from a policy lens, rather than a supervision lens. And we are increasingly trying to make more use of data to support our policy making decisions, and moving more towards strongly evidence-based policy. As you would all know, hopefully, part of our mandate is to focus on safety and stability, but balance that with competition, efficiency, and contestability. And how you measure that and how you make those balances and trade-offs is challenging. The more we can use data to assess the impacts of particular policy change, the better. One of the things that we were charged with in this particular example was responding to the FSI question about setting capital standards such that Australian ADIs are unquestionably strong and in particular positioned in the top quartile. Now, this is a particularly difficult challenge in an environment where all of the regulatory regimes around the world are changing their capital frameworks, and also all of the individual entities within those systems are changing their capital levels over time. And so we needed to draw on available local and international data to form a view of not just where capital levels had been, but also where they were going and where they might go over time. I would stress at this point, and that our chairman would want me to stress, that looking at international capital comparisons has their limits, and capital is only one measure of what it means to be unquestionably strong, particularly if we think about the social licence example or social capital example that we had just a little while ago. Notwithstanding, where did we see capital levels heading? And so we benchmarked international capital levels and tried to get a sense of where the 75th percentile might be and how close or far away the Australian institutions might be, allowing for the number of assumptions and extrapolations that were implicit in that forward projection. So that helped us
to form a view about the size of the task that lay ahead for the Australian industry in terms of getting to that unquestionably strong setting, and what we would then need to do in terms of our policy settings to ensure that that target level of unquestionably strong was achieved. So it's helped to provide some clarity for ADIs, for market commentators and for our supervisors about the trend and the need for building capital over time. So they're just some examples. In the handouts that you will get after this session, we've included a number of other examples that the time didn't allow us to go through today. And some of them are interactive and show how we're sort of trying to look through time. And also the other work that we're doing is to try and sort of draw on different data sources and cross-reference different data sources to see what that tells us. So we're just at the beginning of our journey. As Katrina mentioned, new technologies and of course other changes are going to continue to reshape and change the industry that we regulate, the entities within it, and hence our approach to regulation and supervision. We are currently actively considering lots of questions like how do we embrace and leverage those new technologies? How are our regulated institutions embracing them? What are the risks for us and for the industries that we regulate? How might data, information and approaches to analytics be better shared across government agencies and also between the regulated population and the regulators? And also thinking more broadly about the relevant information that's out there that we're not exploring, and how do we distill and analyse that more efficiently and effectively? As Katrina mentioned, one of the limbs of our data transformation program is the Innovation Centre Lab, and that is where we're doing a lot of our experimentation and looking at how we can draw different data sources together and use different analytic and visualisation tools to really provide insights. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a datathon where we challenged 13 teams, or people could nominate, and we ended up with 13 teams nominating, to solve a problem. It was a superannuation problem. It was looking at how could we actually evolve our member outcomes analysis in superannuation to another level. And we had teams from across the organisation, many of whom actually had never worked or done any analysis in superannuation before, come together, look at available data and try and pull it together and provide some insights to answer that question about what does delivering good member outcomes mean. That has given us some fabulous ideas to explore further, and we will be doing that to support our supervision of the superannuation industry going forward. So we'd hope that as much as we are challenging ourselves to expand and evolve what we do in the data and analytics space, that you and the entities that you work for are also doing that. There is a role for actuaries in looking at better outcomes for your clients and for their customers, and for the financial system as a whole. Thinking about non-traditional data sources and new technologies to do deeper analysis, but more importantly, communicating complex data stories in compelling ways to enable richer insights. And I think that's been the key for us in a lot of the work that we're doing. It's all very well to do the good analysis, but unless you can present it in a way that's clear and well understood, it's very difficult to cut through and really deliver those insights. So we're evolving, the financial system is evolving, it's an industry, it's a data-driven industry that will continue, and the challenge for all of us is to ensure that we get greater value and insights from data and analytics so that we all are turning information into insights. Thank you.
Okay, so Katrina, I might start off with a question for you. So you're the general manager of this newly created division that you were talking about, and you were talking about the insights you're hoping to gain by having a cross-industry view. Do you have any early insights yet? I know it's early days, but is there anything you can share around early thinking on that? And if you want to ask questions, there's some through on SMS. If you want to come to the mic, please identify yourself.
I think that one of the early things has been the work that we've done around the residential mortgages. And so that has been done over a number of years, but we started with that primarily being based in the frontline supervision areas. But when we announced the new benchmarks at the beginning of last year,
we then ran that from this new division, and really with a view for consistency and a view across the whole industry rather than individual supervisors talking to individual entities. And I think that meant we got a very effective result with that. So changing that approach really did give us a different outcome.
Melinda, an example that I think was quite interesting for me was we started our work on the member outcomes in superannuation and we had a discussion at our board which put up a heat map of the industry and how the industry was looking across the various metrics that we were looking at, with, you know, entities down one side, metrics across, where was the red, green, amber. In that discussion, because the member outcomes work in super is very much focused about how do we improve outcomes for members in the super system and particularly for the poorly performing funds, the discussion then said, well, what about the ADI sector or the insurance sector? Surely the same issues emerge there in terms of, you know, risks and underperformance or not delivering good outcomes. What are the metrics we could use to apply the same approach to banking, to general insurance, to health insurance, to life insurance? And so that idea in the superannuation industry got very quickly translated across to the way we were thinking about analysing the other industries, and that work has now progressed within the organisation.
We're running out of time for questions, but there's an interesting one here. How does AASB 17 affect the data that APRA needs to collect and hence the transformational project?
Open question.
Yes.
Too early to say, but obviously it will, and that will be something that we need to think about. I think we're in a bit of a challenging space at the moment where we know there's a lot of changing policy, changing industry information that's needed, but we're also in the middle of a change journey, and so what do we kind of do in terms of changing the data we collect before we've got the new system, and what do we leave for further down the track? I don't know whether...
Yeah, and so
you're kind of building the plane while you're flying it.
Yes, and so the one
what
thing...
What could go wrong?
The one thing with the transformation work is we said this project is not changing what we collect, but we're not stopping the fact
We're glad to hear that.
But we still need to evolve what we collect. And so that's part of
You are changing it.
Close engagement. Well, but the close engagement on changing our data collection solution is all about figuring out what is the best timing for different industries, given everything else that's going on, for when to do that. Yeah. So it's never going to be ideal. We can't just stop sort of policy making we're going to pause for a couple of years, but we're trying to manage that change the best we can.
But a key objective, I think, of the where we want to end up is that if there is a need to change what we collect, that the new systems and processes that we have in place make it much easier for us and for industry. At the moment, changing our data collection is horrid. It's time-consuming. It's difficult for us, and it's difficult for you and the industry. And we want to get to a place where it's much, much easier to make those changes on both sides.
Great. All right. Well, we might leave it on that positive note. Thank you both very much. And I've got a gift for you here.